has a lot of people here, so nervous. But yeah, I'm just gonna start off by talking to you. Okay, is that my time? Yeah, I just want to start off by talking today about the whole the way we think about the world and about the way people think about God. And what a lot of people will say that like ethics came up earlier, and so people were saying, well, like, how can you say like there's people are nice to each other, and like I heard someone say before that, you know, but is it so bad to believe in this if it gives me hope? Well, one thing I would say about all these things is that that these are emotions, hope, and the feeling of niceness and the feeling that it gives me security. They're all emotions that you're feeling. That I would argue is not rational. It's not hard, cold rationality. No, nobody, I think, lives their whole life with hard, cold rationality. In fact, I think that would be a really horrible world to live in. If you dealt with everything with hard, cold rationality in your world, people would be judged on their output or how they performed in society, which would be a pretty awful thing, because you'd end up with things like people would be, they would decide that you couldn't keep people alive if they were too costly, like, oh, elderly people or sick, really sick people. They'd say, oh, well, they're not really worth to keep alive. Like, that's really horrible. No one wants to live in a world where you deal with everything with dry rationality. There was a test done before, actually, about they gave two people, they took two people, person A, person B. They gave person A a 10 euro note and said, well, 10 euros, sorry. And they said they had to offer a certain amount of it to person B. And person B was told that if they took the offer, they both got to keep however much money it was. If they denied it, neither of them got anything. So rationally, you would think that the person, no matter how little the offer is, if they were offered a euro and the other person said, I'm going to keep 9, the rational thing to do would be to take it. Because obviously, one way you're getting 0, one way you're getting 1. But more often than not, people denied it because they said, well, if he can't have it, I'm not having it. Or if I can't have it, he's not having it. That's what I meant. So the thing is, like, that is totally irrational. And when they were asked why they did this, they said, well, it was unfair. So they let their emotions get into this. And that is just an example. What I'm saying, whenever anybody makes a decision or thinks about anything, they always let their emotions in. Not just about letting your emotions in. Your emotions are always there. Your emotions are a part of you. They're something that you always have and that you always use whenever you make any kind of decision. I mean, you can't go through your life without using emotions or compassion. You have to let compassion in and when you're making a decision. So I would say, yeah, okay, it's fine that you believe in God and you want, and it makes you happy and you think it's nice and it gives you hope. But I would argue that they are totally emotional and that your brain works in two ways. You have your thinking brain and you have your feeling brain. And I would say that is your feeling brain working there. It's not your thinking brain. It's not a rational thing. So I would say, from that point of view, I would say that it's totally irrational. And my second point, I was just going to talk about the size of the universe. I think that was brought up a couple of times by guests and by both student speakers. The total vastness of the universe and the tiny, tiny, puny, insignificant size of Earth within this universe can help. Like, that just makes me think of, like, how would you think that if there is a God, I'm not saying there is because I obviously don't believe there is one, but if there was to be a God, why would he spend such an obscenely disproportionate amount of time caring about the tiny, insignificant lives of the people on this earth? And I'm fleeting, I might add, as well, because to, you know, someone who's immortal, that's like our life. Probably even less than that. And there's so many of us as well on this tiny, insignificant planet to us. But to a supreme being, if there was one, why would he care? You can't offer me a point of view. Hey, I also wanted to go on about, like, this is something that may or may not have been brought up earlier, kind of was alluded to, but is there life elsewhere in the universe? I don't know. Probably. That's only my point of view. I would say, given the vastness of it, say there probably is. Will we ever know or have any knowledge, or will we ever meet this life? I would also say probably not, given the sheer vastness of the universe. But that just brings it back to, like, the sheer size of it is just something that we can barely comprehend the sheer size of the universe. So it would make me think that why would anyone care about us? I would argue they don't. We are so insignificant. I'm insignificant. You're all really insignificant. Oh yeah, the second part of it I want to talk to you, this just kind of makes me think that, like, My God, people who believe in religion and people who believe that, this God cares about them, like, that is so self-centered. We used to think, this was pointed out earlier, that the Earth was the center of the universe. And we believe that because that is really a human thing. People tend to think of themselves at the center of everything. And when it was proved that we weren't, it took a long time for people to accept it, but we eventually did. I think most people will agree, apart from Sarah Palin, that we are not the center of the universe, and all that kind of thing. So I wanted to talk about another self-centered thing about people who believe in all these religions. Like, Michael came up earlier and talked about all the different religions that there are throughout the world at the moment. And I would say, well, take a look back through human history. And I would argue that everyone who believes in any religion nowadays is really self-centered. Because if you take a look through history, if you go back to 6,000 years ago, Mesopotamia has one of the oldest recorded religions that we know of. Now they believed that the world was a disc in the middle of the sea, and there was loads of gods that explained everything. As Stephen said, God explained the gaps in our knowledge. Running out of time. They explained everything that maths and science couldn't. The Mesopotamians had a lot of mathematical and scientific discoveries that we still use today. A lot of things they love numbers, they love maths, loads of stuff written about it, and we still use it all today. And they were fantastic at it. But basically, anything they couldn't explain, they used gods to explain. Now, fast forward a little bit, you have the Egyptians, you have the Greeks and the Romans. They all had polytheistic religions that they all believed in because they couldn't explain things otherwise. Now, another thing I'd like to point out in the whole self-centeredness of all the religions, like, Christianity is 2,000 years old. Like, if you go back to, what was it, 14 billion years ago the universe was created, and it took billions of years for evolution to happen and all these other, Homo sapiens. We're Homo sapiens, and before us there was all different kinds of Homo erectus. I know. I knew everyone would laugh when I said that one. That was the only other one I could think of. Homo neanderthalus. Basically, there's so many religions out there, and there were so many in the past. What makes you think? Like, why do you think that the one that was invented 2,000 years ago? That's so little time. What makes you think that that's the one? What makes you think that this is not going to be just disproved like all the other ones in time to come? It probably is. If we can learn, well, we don't learn from our mistakes, but if you were to look back through history, the logical procession is that this is going to be disproved in time to come, in 1,000, 2,000 years, I don't know, but it probably will be. I just want to finish up by saying one thing, and it's about blind faith. It's basically, blind faith is a phrase that everyone knows. It's something that you need to believe in any kind of religion, any kind of God, I think. Because blind faith teaches you not to ask questions. It teaches you not to stand up to any authorities. And blind faith, and those things are all things that go against everything that reason and rationality stands for. And I think God and religion couldn't exist without these things. And I think that, and obviously, if they go against reason and rationality, then I think that to believe in God is totally irrational.
For the opposition, Ms. Sonia Hartigan.
Okay, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I don't think that we are alone in the universe. At the very least, I don't think that we can ever know. But I think, as Stephen said, I think Stephen really undermined himself by saying, I'm asking you to say, why not? And that's what I'm asking you today, ladies and gentlemen, not to take the default position that this is just too out there. Like, maybe it's not. I want to look at why I think it's not only a rational human response to think maybe there is something else in the universe, because I think it's a rational response of the human mind, facing the biggest question we're ever likely to face, ladies and gentlemen. And I think that even if we do decide that God exists, I think that in itself is a rational thing to believe. And I think that finally I want to look at this idea of the arrogance of atheism. I think that, I mean, we've already talked about the self-centeredness of religion, but I think at the same time, it's incredibly self-centered to say that I can definitively say that there is nothing else out there, ladies and gentlemen. So I want to look at this idea of, I mean, if God does not exist and we believe in them, there are a few consequences. But if God does exist and we choose not to believe, then there are huge consequences. Things like like hellfire and brimstone for all eternity. And I think that has been so ingrained in the human psyche for millions of years, ladies and gentlemen. If you look at any kind of cultural system, you have things like yin and yang, you have hell and heaven, and we think that people are scared of what's out there. We think it's, I think it's really, really human to wonder what happens when we die, what happens when we move on from the, and we shuffle off the mortal coil. I think it's really rational to wonder about that. I think it's also rational to wonder, is it going to be good or bad? And I think if you don't believe in heaven, I think it's normal to want to qualify for entry anyway, just in case, you know, you die and you're like, shit, oh my God, like, Ivan, you're so screwed if you're wrong. But I mean, I think that it's not irrational for humans to want to know what's happening. And I think it's not irrational for humans to just be kind of like, I want to keep that door open. I don't want to say that there is no God, that there is nothing else out there, because the consequences for me could be like unbelievably big and unbelievably great if I don't do that. The premise of the teleological argument is the idea that the universe is created with a special purpose in mind. And if you look at anything, ladies and gentlemen, you'll see that. Like, things are constructed in a really specific way. And, I mean, this raises two questions. First of all, the spark of life. Like, what instigated the universe as we know it? Now, we heard some really interesting arguments that, like, there are theories as to, like, maybe there was space and time beforehand. But equally, I think we could say that there was nothing beforehand, and something had to happen to turn nothing into something. No, thanks, Ross. So, what exactly kicked the universe into action, ladies and gentlemen? Like, scientists constantly endorse this idea of cause and effect in everything that happens within the universe, ladies and gentlemen. But yet, atheists or scientists are equally happy to say that there is no such thing as a cause. There is only effect when it comes to something like the Big Bang, when it comes to the universe. They're perfectly happy to say, yes, there's suddenly something, even though we have no idea what there was to start it off. No thanks. I think that rational reasons would dictate that in some shape or form, a being of such greatness that we can't comprehend did start this. I think it's not entirely reasonable to say that, no thanks, because if this being is so great, we're not able to understand it either. I don't think we should be expected to. So we don't have to actually have any answers. We're just being asked to say maybe there is. I mean, like, Ivan talked about this idea of blind faith. And I think that equally there can be blind faith in science to say that, well, because science can lay everything out neatly and tidy, that we should automatically believe it. I think to have faith, nothing, it's not tidy, it's not neat, it's incredibly difficult. But I don't think that makes it any less valuable or any less believable. Equally, I don't think that, like, Ivan asked the idea, like, of why would God care about us? When we're so small and we're so insignificant. Equally, I don't think we can understand that either. I don't think we have to understand. I think if God is that great, we're never going to be able to understand him anyway. So we look at this idea of order in the universe. If you look at anything within the universe, if you take apart any human organism, such as the eye or the ear, they're all constructed so perfectly in order to carry out that function. No, thank you. Every natural system on Earth, ladies and gentlemen, from the eye to the ear to photosynthesis, to anything that occurs in nature, all happens in order to support life on this planet, ladies and gentlemen. So from the humble amoeba to things like photosynthesis, everything happens in a certain order. I mean, equally, there are literally millions of other ways that this universe could have developed, that could have happened. No, thank you. Like, but I think... majority of these possible universes couldn't have supported life. So I think you have to ask, why did this universe evolve in this particular path? I think it is possible that someone or somebody or something out there had this idea for it, that it could support life, and that there was some kind of higher purpose that we're not able to understand, ladies and gentlemen. No, thank you. And we think that it's more probable, or at least plausible, that the universe was created with God in mind, that God created this. And I don't think it's completely ridiculous to say that this isn't possible at all. Just to move on to this last idea of the kind of the arrogance of atheism and what it asks us to do, and why I think that's kind of unhealthy. Like, what we're so often asked to do by atheists is to use our feeble human minds that can't understand, like, some of the more complex ideas of the universe, ladies and gentlemen, that even people who have studied for years and years and years still can't get to the bottom of. Oh, thank you. And atheists ask us, well, some atheists ask us to try to comprehend all these ideas and then to make a definite stand on it. Not to take an agnostic stance of, well, I don't know, I'm not sure, but to say there's definitely no God, there's definitely nothing else out there. So not even, like, we're not even asked to lean towards one way of thinking. We've been asked to make, you know, a call, to categorize categorically say there is nothing, and that there is nothing else. And I know it's not particularly kosher to say it, ladies and gentlemen, but I think that there is something like inside like all of us that says maybe there is something else out there, ladies and gentlemen. And there's no way to put that into words. There's no way to like scientifically prove that. I can't put it down on paper, ladies and gentlemen. But I mean, maybe there is something to be said for the idea that people do feel a need to say to go to mass, to join an organized religion, or to worship in some way, or even to kind of say, well, maybe there is something else out there. Like, I don't have all the answers. I can't. I don't think it's so weird to think that we're not actually alone in the universe. I don't think that's some kind of hippie trippy nonsense. Like, I think that's perfectly rational. I think like all of us have looked up into the sky and realised that we are tiny, ladies and gentlemen. That something has created this unbelievable life system that goes far beyond our own planet and right into the very universe, ladies and gentlemen. I don't think it's so odd to think that maybe we're not alone there. Like, Stephen besieged this house, ladies and gentlemen, to ask why. But I would ask you all to ask why not. And so those.
And now to close the case for the proposition, Mr. Ross McGuire.
Mr. Auditor, ladies and gentlemen of the Literary and Historical Society, ladies and gentlemen, I don't personally necessarily all the time believe in himself or herself or themselves, playing to the Buddhists and Hindus in the audience, but I don't necessarily believe at the same time that God doesn't exist. I'm not an atheist. I just believe that there's no point asking the question in the first place. Why? Because I think that God, or the Force, or whatever, is fundamentally unknowable and unprovable. I think the only way that God makes sense, either there is a God, and he's given us evidence, and we're all really, 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 really stupid, in which case we are all a massive failure on his part. Or God does exist, and he doesn't want there to be evidence, which he can do because he's omnipotent. Stay with me. In which case, he is asking for us to believe in him without evidence. For some reason, it may be heaven and hell, it may just be for the kicks. But I think to believe in God, it makes most sense to believe that he didn't want there to be evidence. Or he's just not there. But you can't prove it. You can't prove he's not there. You can't prove that anything is not something. It's impossible. At the same time, you can't prove that something that's omnipotent, that doesn't want to be proven, exists. It's okay. I think that... is it rational? Does it make sense to believe in God? And I don't think it does. What does it mean for something to be rational? And there are those who said it's science. Science is what is rationality. I disagree. I don't agree with those atheists and those scientists who believe that science is the be-all and end-all of human knowledge. I believe that rationality comes from the ability of people to understand that they exist and other people exist, and when they do something, that can piss off other people or make them happy. Or people can kind of go meh, like you're doing right now. But that we're aware of what's going on. I think that's at the root of rationality and that empathy. And our ability to say that someone did something, and that was a bad thing to do, or a good thing to do. The ability to judge those actions using that empathy that we have. I think that's the difference between us and all the other animals on this planet. And there are more differences between us and other forms of life, like the humble amoeba, which, by the way, I think is a complete assumption. Like, if you were able to phagocytose things, would you be humble? I would be really arrogant. ability to deliberately make our life and the lives of others better. That's what I think rationality is. I think it's the ability to do something deliberately. It's the ability to design, observe, and judge purpose in this universe. That's what I think rationality is. And that's what I think is at the core of our morality. I don't think our morality was handed down by himself. I think rationality is morality. Because do unto others as you would have done unto you. That just makes sense. If you don't like getting punched in the face, don't punch other people in the face. That just makes sense. It's rational. It's the best way to live. So, what does believing in God mean? Well, I think believing in God means that you either have blind faith, you're a Christian textualist, or you just believe that all of this was made by God and that's it, and I believe that because I do. And that's the best reason to believe anything, because you do. Grand. Irrelevant. Can't discuss that. Although there are more people, and it's much more common now, that those who believe in God because they believe it makes some kind of sense. Because as Onya said, and as Michael said, and as the other people who were sitting behind me, whose names I didn't write down, said, that it makes sense because we can't simply accept that the universe exists. That it exists and it works. Because that doesn't make sense. What makes much more sense is to believe that a God exists. A God who just exists and a God who makes sense. There's no difference between believing that the universe is the definition of existence and God is the definition of existence. The universe made itself, or God made the universe. What made God? Himself? Difficult. Or is there some kind of mama and papa God? With their mama and papa and baby godlike porridge. No thanks, because that was a joke. Difference, but and this comes right to the core of what I believe. Why is it not rational to believe in God? Because if you're believing in God, the only reason to believe in God in a make sense type of view is that God is the purpose, and we've heard this over and over again. God is the purpose behind all of this. All of this. My arms are currently one universe wide at the moment. All of this. God is the purpose. Why does there need to be a purpose behind all of this? Is it not simply a projection of us and our abilities and our views of the world onto existence? Are we not just presuming that something like us created us because we created everything else that we care about? I think that makes the most sense. But the reason why this is irrational, because to believe in a greater purpose outside of ourselves is an abrogation and a shirking of our responsibility to make this world as good as it can be. Because if you believe that there's a greater or higher purpose, that diminishes our purpose, our ability to make this world the best that it can be for us and for those we care about and for other people in the world. And I think God would agree with me. Because if I go to heaven or to hell or to the bus station with the shuttle bus in between the two, often referred to as limbo, and God says, "Why didn't you believe in me?" I'll say, "Because I thought it made most sense for me to take responsibility for the things that I did. For me to say that I did good because I wanted to do good. Not because I was designed to do good, not because good was destined upon me, and not because I wanted to get into heaven, but because I thought it was the best thing to do, and I believed that I could do it." That, I believe, makes sense. Thank you for your very kind attention.
Close the case for the opposition, Professor John Ward Montgomery.
This has been an experience. Yes. Let me try to indicate the common ground among those on the other side. The common ground that you've heard in the arguments in favor of atheism, or rather that belief in God is irrational, they really all boil down to a position taken by an astronomer by the name of Laplace. There is a story, and this is confirmed, that Napoleon read Laplace's work dealing with the solar system. And having read this, I'm sure he read it in a Reader's Digest version, but in any case, he was supposed to have read this work, and he went to Laplace, and he said, "This is a wonderful work, but it's very strange. You haven't mentioned God once in it." And Laplace replied, "Je n'ai pas besoin de cette hypothèse. I have no need of this hypothesis." The common argument among those who are arguing against the rationality of theism is simply that God isn't necessary to explain anything. One can operate perfectly well without him. Now, what I want to do is to go back over the positions already taken and show you that, as a matter of fact, this hypothesis is both rational and really important. Okay. First of all, the humanist argument. The humanist argument is we simply don't need God because human values are adequate. We can have a fine society. We can have the golden rule. We can be nice and sweet to others without the existence of God. The problem there is that morals and ethics need an absolute foundation. If you don't have an absolute foundation, they will necessarily reflect the culture and values of the particular people setting them forth. Water doesn't rise above its own level. As Wittgenstein said in the Tractatus, Proposition 6 and so forth, ethics is transcendental. The only valid ethic would be an ethic that comes from outside the human situation, therefore an absolute ethic. My legal work is in human rights. And what we need in human rights are inalienable rights, rights that don't change according to the cultural situation. You never can have that sort of thing unless you have an absolute source for the rights. All right, we move on to the scientific area. Here, having listened to Professor Connell, I can't resist quoting Mark Twain. "There is something fascinating about science. One gets such wholesale returns of conjecture out of such a trifling investment of fact." You don't need facts, really. The idea is to move in the direction of conjecture. The best facts that we do have, cosmologically, happen to point to an origin point, the Big Bang. Now, as critics of the position that Professor Connell has taken say, why don't we move in the direction of a multiverse? This is only one universe. This may appear to be finely tuned, but after all, there can be an infinite number of multiverses. The difficulty with that kind of thing is that we only have this one. We're only in this universe, and this universe does indeed appear to be finely tuned. And if there were multiverses, there would have to be a multiverse generator of some kind, and that would have to be finely tuned in order to explain even the universe that we happen to be in. Fascinatingly enough, another attempt to get around this has been the eternal inflation approach. But even there, Guth and other people who argue that position have pointed out that, and I quote the title of one of Guth's papers, "Inflationary space-times are not past complete," meaning maybe things expand and move forward forever in an inflationary way, but they don't move back that way. You've still got the problem of starting point. Now, anything that has a beginning requires an explanation. The reason why God doesn't require an explanation is that he doesn't have a beginning point. It is far more rational to start from a God than from a universe where contingency is evident all around us. One of our speakers quoted from Professor Wolpert, who unfortunately can't be here tonight, and the comment was made at the very beginning of everything, having to do with tool making. It's the position of Professor Wolpert that the origin of religious belief comes from causation, and having to explain things, and causation comes from tool making. Now, I don't have anything against tool making, except for the fact that I was thrown out of high school industrial arts for trying to open a can of beans with a cold chisel, and that was an unfortunate event. But the problem with trying to use a genetic explanation for beliefs is, interestingly enough, the genetic fallacy. This is a logical fallacy. The genetic fallacy says that the origin of a thing determines its value. Now, this is definitely not the case. For example, ammonia was discovered by the alchemist Brandt in the 17th century when he was boiling toads in urine. Now, the origin of ammonia leaves something to be desired, but the value of ammonia is independent of that. And by the same token, even if we could say that our religious beliefs have some genetic background, that wouldn't deal with the issue of the truth of those beliefs. All right, let's go to the truth question. How do we know there is a God? Well, let me point you to a different kind of evidence from what's been raised here. Let me point you to Jesus Christ. To Jesus Christ. You're not going to be able to explain Jesus Christ apart from God. A cosmologist who doesn't agree with our cosmologist here is Owen Gingerich. He did a little book entitled God's Universe, and he ends this as follows. Jesus is a supreme example of personal communication from God. When the Apostle Peter requested, "Show us the Father," Jesus responded, "Anyone who has seen me has seen the Father." Jesus backed this up by his resurrection from the dead. And I'll give you another little story. This is also a true story. Talleyrand, the philosopher, had a discussion with a minor philosopher by the name of Lacavalière. Lacavalière wanted to start a new religion. It was along the lines of humanism, and it didn't take. And he was very disturbed. And Talleyrand said to him, "It seems to me that Jesus Christ, in order to found his religion, first died and rose again on the third day. You could at least do that much." The fact of the matter is, if you want to discover whether God is there and needed, go to the New Testament. Go to the New Testament. Read it, at least with a suspension of disbelief, and you will find something remarkable. J.B. Phillips, the translator, said when he was doing the translation of the New Testament, it was like wiring a house without turning the mains off. And J.R.R. Tolkien said, "There is no story ever told that more skeptical people have accepted on its own merits." Go there.
And firstly, I would like to extend the House's and the Literary Historical Society's deepest thanks to the guests who joined us this evening, Dr. John Wark-Montgomery, Professor John Wark-Montgomery, Sean Carroll, Dr. Angus Manoj, Dr. Alistair Noble, and Dr. Fred Edwards. Send our sincerest thanks to Mr. Michael Connery, who is the debate convener for this, who put in a tremendous amount of work to make this debate happen. Without further ado, to put the motion to the House, that this House finds it irrational to hold a belief in God, can all those who in favour please say aye.
Aye!
And all those opposed, please say nay.
Nay!
Okay, we're going to have to do a show of hands. proposition, ayes, hands up. Okay, I'm actually going to do a count. 1, 2, 3. Nay. The motion is defeated.